Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hello, Twisted Humans. Do you find yourself wanting to know more about the latest murder, conspiracy, cult, or haunting?
Then this is the podcast for you.
In 1952, there was a record high of UFOs reported. 1,500 sightings.
There has been evidence of human sacrifice, devil worship, and it is haunted by more spirits than can be counted.
A family of two adults and two kids reportedly saw a giant flying thing with glowing red eyes.
And meanwhile, the family's nanny that helped Veronica to care for her and Lucian's children was found bludgeoned to death in the basement of their family home.
I'm Alicia.
And I'm Sierra. And this is
Twisted and Uncorked.
Hey, fellow truth seekers, I'm Justin.
And I'm Brandy, and together we'll be your guides on this spine-tingling journey through the unknown.
We dive headfirst into the eerie realms of cryptids, from Bigfoot to Loch Ness Monster.
And hold on tight, because we'll explore spine-chilling encounters with extraterrestrial beings and UFO sightings that will leave you questioning what's really out there.
Beyond the Shadows is not your average paranormal podcast. Our goal is simple. To shed light on the shadows that haunt our world and confront the unexplained with an open mind.
And for the skeptics, don't worry, we have something for you too. Our conspiracy theories will challenge your beliefs and make you question everything. So, if you're fascinated by the paranormal, yearn for chilling true crime stories, or crave the adrenaline rush of uncovering conspiracies,
join us on this hair-raising adventure as we journey beyond the shadows.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us for our Brutal, Bizarre, and Booziness.
Yes, always good to chat with you guys again.
So we do have some good stories today, but we also have an update on the bonus episode that we did. Gosh, it's been a long time ago. It was like 51A or B, or it was like between 51 and 52 was our bonus episode, I believe. And it was about a local, it was a hometown story. Do you remember it, Declan?
Yeah, I remember a little bit about that case. Okay. You might need to refresh our listeners.
So I'm not going to rehash the whole story, but basically, Klamath Falls man who goes by the name Negasi Zuberi had gone to Seattle, picked up a woman in Seattle, tased her, threw her in the back of his car, and drove her across state lines, which is important, drove her to Southern Oregon to the house that he was living in with his wife and two kids, and locked her up in a makeshift cell in his garage.
Get crazy.
Yes. He made the cell out of cinder blocks that the photographs of the cinder blocks were stacked directly on top of each other. They weren't overlapping. So not apparently he didn't work in construction or he would have known better. But she was able to get out of the cell and flagged down a nearby passerby driving by, who took her to the hospital. He ended up getting arrested. There was a little bit of, he slipped town. They caught him in Nevada and arrested him for it. So the update is that after his arrest, another victim came forward, another local victim out of our town, and said that basically similar things had happened to her. He had sexually assaulted her and restrained her to some degree. She was a second count. So the trial is over. It was a federal trial because he brought the victim across state lines. It was a federal crime. And he has been sentenced to 2 life sentences for those crimes.
That's good.
Yeah.
I've heard federal prisons are a lot better than state prisons, though, so that kind of sucks, but...
I think it depends on what kind of federal prison you're in, though.
New Life's, that's probably not a great prison that he's probably not going to a camp.
No, he's not going to a camp. There's no way he's going to a camp. He's going to a federal prison that's, you know, max security, I would assume. I couldn't find anywhere that it said, like, where he was going to be living out the rest of his days. And who knows, it might change after he's been at one place. That seems to be something that happens occasionally, where they move him from one prison to another. But he's not getting out.
Did
so, yay.
How old the second victim was?
I was not able to find hardly any information about her. I couldn't find any details of her, just that she was a local woman. I looked up several articles trying to find out some information, but no, all of that information is been kept secret, it appears, to be for protecting her. I don't even know if they gave the name of the original victim that started the whole thing that got him caught. But either way, apparently the trial was over in October of 2024 and they just sentenced him in mid-January. So.
Okay. So.
It took him a while to sentence.
Maybe more information will be coming out.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think his other victim was fairly young, I think in her 20s or something, but he was 30 when he was arrested, I believe. 31 at sentencing, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a good guy, but it's nice to know that it was a fairly rapid trial and everything. He had a court-appointed attorney during the trial, but then he represented himself at the sentencing hearing, which apparently was strange and, yes, dumb. And the judge said they would give him another attorney for his appeal trial because they expect that there will be one. So.
Okay.
Anyway, that is a wrap-up of our episode. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. It's pretty wild. Again, I think that was like between episodes 51 and 52, if I remember correctly.
Quite a while ago.
It was, because we're up to 129. I think this is 129 now. Mm-hmm. I have to take my socks and shoes off and count on my fingers and toes, but I think it was 129. Well, what story are you going to tell us about today?
I am going to be talking about Teresita Bassa.
Oh, I love this story.
It's very interesting. It's both brutal and bizarre, but I put it in the brutal category. What are you going to be telling us about?
I am going to be talking about autism, but in specific relationship to some paranormal parapsychology concept. So
That sounds interesting.
Yes. It's based on a recent podcast that I listened to that I'm not going to cover the entire, I'm not just going to rehash the entire podcast, but I do recommend going to listen to it. I'll get into that a little bit later, but to go with this drink, you'd almost think I'd been drinking already. To go with this story, I brought the drink called Silent Seven, and the ingredients are 2 ounces of Tennessee whiskey, 2/3 of an ounce of Cointreau or triple sec, 2/3 of an ounce of lemon juice, and the recipe calls for 1/4 of an ounce of Monin pure cane syrup. But why go buy simple syrup? Essentially, that's what it is. Just make simple syrup. It's fine. I made mine. I can't imagine it would be anything fancy. I made simple syrup. So the steps are to shake all the ingredients in a shaker with ice, strain into an ice-filled old-fashioned glass, and to express an orange zest twist over the glass and use as garnish. All right. I have high hopes for this drink because I think it's going to be good. Are you ready? Let's try it.
I am ready.
Okay. I think this could be a lot better with a better whiskey. I'm not a fan of the whiskey that I used.
What kind of whiskey did you use? Did you use Tennessee whiskey?
I don't remember. I just grabbed a bottle. It was not my typical bourbon because I wanted to save it in case the drink was bad. And I think the funky flavor that I'm getting is the whatever weird whiskey I grabbed off the shelf. I got to put that weird whiskey in a separate location so that I don't grab it on accident.
Mm. Yeah, I just buy whiskey that I know I like. So
I don't even know where this bottle came from. It just appeared on the shelf. Maybe your dad knows where it came from. I don't know. He's gotten some whiskey from friends at the gym and friends at work and stuff. And so maybe that's where it came from. But I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. So I'm going to get into this story. We've talked about psychic phenomenon. Specifically, we talked about the Stargate Project a while ago. Psychic phenomenon can include many different concepts from ESP to clairvoyance and even telekinesis, which is moving objects with your mind, which I always thought would be a fantastic superpower, and I wish that I had that because sometimes I'm really lazy and I don't want to get off the couch. It'd be nice if I could just be like, I gotta move this with my mind. Like I said, we talked a little bit about similar ideas being tested by the military way back in episode 3 when we discussed the Stargate Project. Do you believe that was episode 3?
I could understand that because I try and look all the time to try and find similar things like that. And
right,
it's kind of hard to find information like that.
Yeah. Episode 3 was a really long time ago. So as a reminder, Stargate Project focused on looking at remote viewing, or the ability of someone to physically see events or information from a great distance. Although the project was studied for a couple of decades, the CIA declassified it and said that it really hadn't proven to be successful. They did that in about in the 1990s. So they studied it for a while and then went, eh, whatever. I don't want to rehash that whole story or the project today, but today's topic is somewhat similar. Today I'm going to talk about telepathy.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So telepathy is defined as the supposed communication of thoughts or ideas by means other than the known senses, meaning that the person who is believed to be telepathic can know someone else's thoughts without any exchange of words or body cues. Do you want, would you like to have like, that?
Isn't telepathy like where you can move things with your mind too?
Or no, that's telekinesis.
Telekinesis, okay.
Yes, same. That's telekinesis. It's same still thing, brain stuff, but kinesis is the moving of things, and telepathy is knowing, like knowing what someone else is thinking, which I do not want to know. I don't want to know what anyone else is thinking. Keep the thoughts to yourself. Sometimes we think of things that are bad and no one else needs to know them. And
yeah,
broadcasting them is not going to do anybody any good. So scientific studies have been conducted in an effort to prove and also disprove the concept of telepathy. Although there are no conclusive science-backed experiments that prove the existence of telepathy, there are several studies that show some difference in brain function to people claiming to have telepathy, meaning that more studies need to be conducted to rule out the idea of it and really get to the bottom of it. And when I say science-backed experiments, I mean like double-blind, separate places, and it's, you know, something that observers or the people involved in it couldn't be influencing, which we'll talk about why that's kind of difficult in this specific story, but it's hard to develop those kind of experiments and have them be legit. So it's kind of more a lot of word of mouth, people saying that they could do these things or that someone they know can do these things. So let's get into the idea as it pertains to autism. There is a population of people.
I'm interested to see where this goes.
Okay. Well, hang on to your seat. So there's a population of people who have been gaining some interest in regards to telepathy. I'm speaking specifically about some nonverbal or reduced verbal autistic children and adults. Through this discussion, I'm going to be referring to the people as children, not because adults don't seem to have this capacity as they were children and then aged out of it or anything. But most of the stories that I have heard and read about were children or very young adults, like 17, 18, 19 year olds kind of thing, because it's kind of a newer concept as far as gaining some information being shared kind of thing. So autism is a diagnosis based on symptoms, which involve difficulty with social interaction, verbal and nonverbal communication, and repetitive behaviors. It is considered a spectrum disorder, with severity being varied across individuals. Symptoms often appear between 10 and 18 months of age. However, diagnosis doesn't often occur until the child is 4 or more years old, which is a long time to not have any kind of clarity as to what is going on.
What age do kids typically start speaking?
Around a year in general.
I feel like you would be able to tell, like, before 4 if a kid's not saying anything or...
Yes.
Like, yeah, okay.
Yes. Kids typically have some kind of language, you know, when they're 6, 8, 10 months old. that develops more as they get older. But some kids, I mean, I've heard of kids that were 2 or 3 before they really started talking, and then they just started talking in full sentences. That would not put them on the spectrum disorder. That would just put them as, you know, a slow kind of thing. So it's not just verbal, but there's typically, like I mentioned, some other symptoms, like the behaviors, the social interaction. Sometimes they just are too queued up on things like sensory disorders that play into the whole autism spectrum. So basically, some autistic children are nonverbal at all, and some have very limited verbal abilities, which goes towards that diagnosis. Parents with children in this category often feel frustrated, like their child is trapped inside a body without the ability to communicate their wants and needs. Completely understandable if, you know, you're in there, but you can't communicate what I want juice. Or when you were about 2 was the only time that you were kind of doing a little, when I say tantrums, your tantrums were very mild. You would stand in the kitchen and get really frustrated. And it took us a while to figure out why you were frustrated, but it was because you wanted something and you could not get the words to say, I want this, because you were not old enough to really communicate, I would like this, or can I have juice, or something along those lines. And you would just stand there and get really frustrated. And then once you started talking more, those things completely went away. So
weird.
Completely understand if, you know, parents are feeling frustrated by this. However, some parents in this situation have reported some really amazing findings from their nonverbal child. This is where telepathy comes in. But it's not just the parents that have noticed skills in these autistic individuals. It's also been noted by some teachers, caregivers, doctors, and other family members. This concept is being studied by a neuropsychologist, Dr. Diane Hennessy, and has been recently featured in a podcast called The Telepathy Tapes. This is where I found out about this concept and ideas that this is happening, is from The Telepathy Tapes, which I would recommend listening to. It's really interesting, and I'm not going to go over every single story that's in there. I'm just going to give you kind of a highlight, and we're going to talk about like the concept of it. In some circumstances, the child seems to have a telepathic connection with only one person, like one of the parents, while other children seem to have a connection with multiple people. The testing methods being used often involve the concept known as facilitated communication or supported typing. The basic concept of this is the use of an assistant who guides the non-speaker's arm or hand to use a keyboard, a letterboard, or another device to spell or type in an effort to communicate. A lot of parents or caregivers of nonverbal kids think this type of communication is great because it finally allows them to have a two-way interaction with their child. But this is where the problem comes in, because the scientific community thinks, and the education system, are super skeptical about facilitated communication. Their concern is that the assistant or the facilitator, basically the person that helps guide the movement, is directly influencing the child and not the other way around. So yeah,
just like one-sided kind of like influence.
Yes, a lot. It's kind of likened to using a Ouija board, in that you might just have your fingertips on there, but you're subconsciously guiding the movement of the planchette on a Ouija board. The skeptics are saying they're unconsciously, or even consciously, you know, guiding the movement of the child to spell the things on the letterboard or to indicate the things on the communication board that they're using. Sometimes it's an iPad or some other. Yeah. So that's where the biggest problem comes in, is how to test these kids in that situation. However, those that believe in this method of communication point out that sometimes touch is necessary due to the child having difficulties with movements. One of the problems with autism is that the individual can't control their motor function as well as people who don't have the condition. So having an assistant there to kind of ground them, so to speak, is what helps them to be able to facilitate this communication. So what are the tests that are being done with these non-speakers? I'm going to cover a few of them. The tests are designed to hopefully eliminate any influence from the facilitator and to truly test for a telepathic ability in the child. Random number generators or complex math equations are used, random image generators, and tests looking for identification and sorting of colors have been used. The image or number is shown to the facilitator, and then the child is asked to identify what the facilitator has been shown. So the child never sees the image, the number, the whatever. It's just shown to the facilitator. And then the facilitator helps them to spell out the thing or identify it. The basic idea is to give the facilitator something completely unique. That's why they use random number generators and image generators. So I can't go, I was thinking of an orange, and you spell apple, and then I go, yeah, I was actually thinking of an apple. That obviously wouldn't work.
So you said they helped them to spell what the facilitator is seeing. Do you know how? Like, how do they influence
that? Like gently touch their hand or their head or some part of their body. And the facilitators are saying this is a way to either originally, it kind of starts where they're like holding the wrist, and then as the child gets more comfortable with it, then they're supposed to decrease the amount of touch and just use like a finger on some part of the body. That is to help them ground them and help them to calm down. In the Telepathy Tapes podcast, numerous tests are described and used on multiple children. And in each of the tests detailed in the show, the children have proven to be accurate 100% of the time.
Okay.
Yes.
I find that hard to believe because 100% is a very large number.
Right. Which I think
there's some fudging of the numbers.
Well, that's the problem for me personally, is 100% is pretty amazing, but not much stuff in this world is 100% all the time.
Are these tests being run by one group of people or by multiple groups? Like, is there...
It's been report. So the podcast, it's the podcast host. She's researching it, and she's doing her own tests. But there is a neuropsychiatrist who is doing her own tests as well. And then people that do this type of communication across the world have not necessarily done a test, but reported, you know, like one lady said she works with autistic children, and one of them really liked sweets. And so she would hide candy, and then the child would spell out, I know where the candy is, and then indicate where the candy was. So the test
sounds like some weird CIA programming thing. Maybe
they the CIA should, actually.
Autism.
They should look into it. It is pointed out. It is pointed out that some of the testing will automatically be rejected because the facilitator is touching the child and could either purposely or subconsciously direct the child to answer the question properly. However, they do describe some of the testing occurring with the individuals in different rooms. So if they're in different rooms, it makes you think that how are they influencing? So not all of them are using this facilitated communication. Some are using it. A lot of them are using it, but some are able to use like an iPad or their own letter board and communicate this information without being touched, which would lend itself to be more appropriate for from a testing standpoint from the scientific community. Another factor that has been described is knowledge that some non-speakers have in regards to people that they have never met and places they have never been. For example, there is a story about a child describing knowledge of a person in a different part of the country that neither the child nor the parent had ever met and couldn't know any information about. Yet the child knew information about what this person was doing for work and described the area near the person's home. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Project start another, date type shit.
Right. Another truly interesting factor to the telepathy concept is a commonly reported meeting place that the non-speakers describe. Several of them call it the hill, which they describe as a place they can access through their mind where other nonverbal telepaths basically have virtual meetings. Think of it like a mental Zoom call for socializing with like-minded individuals. So they don't go anywhere physically, but they go to this place in their mind. And because they can communicate mentally, there's no need for letter boards or a facilitator. They can just go to the hill and have telepathic communications and conversations with each other and know each other and they know about stuff. Those that believe in the telepathic abilities of these individuals see a spiritual side that is not reflected in the material world, that is controlled by what we can see and touch. Skeptics don't necessarily dispute the spirituality of nonverbal people, but they disagree with the concept of their supposed telepathic abilities. Facilitated communication seems to be one of the biggest roadblocks to gaining acceptance because they believe the facilitator is the one influencing the outcome. But how do you test communication in a nonverbal person, especially if they have motor difficulties?
Is that from the iPad thing? Are they typing out like the candy bar is in the upper left cabinet?
But some of these individuals, child or adult, don't have a lot of motor control. And so it's hard to get them to type. Yeah, it's hard for us people who type to hit the right button sometimes.
Like Stephen King couldn't, or not Stephen King, Stephen Hawking couldn't move, but he had the iPad that I don't really know how it worked, but he could speak. So maybe they have a fancy iPad like that.
That would be great if they could figure that out. I'm not sure how they would use that, but I think it would be amazing if they could come up with some kind of technology that could be used with the nonverbal people to facilitate that communication. Those that use facilitated communication want to see recognition of the technique and for people to know there is an individual and independent thoughts and feelings inside the body of the non-speaker. They want everyone to know that they can communicate. It's just different from how we communicate. So if you're interested in like the details of the tests, I recommend listening to the podcast. You know, there's a lot of skeptics out there who are like, it's nonsense. it's all fake. But there's some really interesting stories and some really odd coincidences that make you go, well, maybe it's possible. You know, one of the kids that had been in the earlier episodes passed away suddenly, and people that he had never met physically, other autistic telepaths, knew that he had passed and communicated that to their family members before the family member knew that it had happened.
That's strange.
It is super strange, but it's an amazing concept, and it would be really cool if it was true and they could figure out how to, you know, I don't want to say monopolize because that sounds degrading, but to help them communicate so that they can get those thoughts out into the world.
Yeah, and I'm sure you said monopolize, but if they could figure that out, I'm sure they'd make a lot of money because it seems to be a growing issue.
Yeah,
in our society.
Very true. Very true. Tell us about Teresita Bassa.
Okay, let's get into Teresita Bassa. So, at around 8:40 p.m. on Friday 21st, 1977, Chicago firefighters arrived at Teresita Bassa's apartment after neighbors called 911 and reported the smell of smoke coming from her apartment. The handyman from the apartment complex used his keys to unlock her door for firefighters, and they proceeded into Teresita's bedroom, where a ghastly discovery was made. Teresita was born in the Philippines in 1929 and moved to the U.S. in the 60s to study music. She became a respiratory therapist at the Edgewater Hospital in Chicago. She was nice, but mostly kept to herself apart from some friends at the hospital. When firefighters entered her apartment, they discovered the smoke was coming from a burning pile of clothes and a mattress in her bedroom. Firefighters lifted up the mattress and discovered Teresita's nude body with a knife sticking out of her chest, laid out in a position that suggested she was sexually assaulted. However, autopsy revealed she was not.
Oh, that's good.
The police were called and an investigation was launched. Her apartment appeared as if it were ransacked, and the only clue they could find was a note saying, "Get tickets for AS." After interviewing family and friends, the police hit a dead end in the case for about 5 months until some unbelievable evidence was presented to them. Remy Bias, or Remy Chua, I'm sure I pronounced her name incorrectly, but she worked with Teresita and began experiencing some supernatural events. One day in the locker room at the hospital, Remy saw a vision of Teresita and a man's face behind her. For weeks after this, she would have dreams and nightmares about Teresita and what happened to her. Teresita would often tell Remy she needed to go to the police to tell them what happened to her. One day, while at home with her husband, Remy took a nap and began having one of these nightmares. However, her husband noticed that she began speaking in a voice that was not hers.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, super strange.
Bad enough to have nightmares about someone that you knew and that had died, but that...
You're talking to your husband in a voice that he doesn't recognize, that's something weird.
Imagine her husband. She'd been telling him, oh, I'm having these nightmares and stuff. And oh my God.
So her husband, Jose, decided not to wake her and listen to what she had to say.
Oh, that's smart.
The voice. Yeah. I guess I would be scared to wake her. You're not supposed to wake someone that's sleepwalking.
True.
I guess you're not supposed to wake someone that's sleep talking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, true.
The voice claims she was Teresita and told Jose that a man named Alan Showery, who was an orderly at the hospital that Teresita worked at, had come to her apartment to help her fix her TV. He apparently didn't have the tools necessary to fix her TV, so he returned home and came back later with the proper tools to fix the TV, and he attacked her.
What a jerk.
Jose was obviously shocked by this and decided to keep this information to himself. That was until several weeks later when the voice took over his wife again, and she was while she was sleeping. The voice asked Jose why he hadn't gone to the police yet, and he said he didn't have any evidence to bring to the police to confirm this story.
Right. Could you imagine the cops? This guy goes, yeah, like, so
okay, your wife,
this is what's happening. And my wife talks in a weird voice, and they're
your
gonna be like,
possessed by a dead girl. Okay, yeah,
bro.
Sure.
Yeah, GTFO. Yeah.
The voice told Jose that Alan had stolen her jewelry and given it to his girlfriend. Which, imagine you find that information as the girlfriend. It's like, you gave me some dead woman's jewelry?
You know, it has happened in so many stories that we've talked about that I think Bundy did that too. He gave some of his victim's jewelry to his girlfriend, if I remember right.
Yeah.
I think it's happened a bunch of different times, but it's gross. Don't do that.
Yes, very gross. So Jose felt this would be enough evidence to get the police involved and contacted Detective Joe Statula. His name sounds too much like Dracula, but
oh yeah,
he was investigating the case. Sorry, I clicked on it. Messed me up. Joe was skeptical of the story, but decided it might be best lead he had in the moment, because the case had pretty much gone cold at this point. They didn't really have any leads.
He did a background check.
Yeah. He did a background check into Alan and discovered he lived near Teresita and worked in the same hospital as her. When he spoke with Teresita's coworkers, they mentioned that Alan had planned to go to Teresita's house after work and help her fix her TV, which made Jose and Remy's story credible. Joe brought Alan in for questioning, and he admitted that he had gone to Teresita's apartment that night, but was unable to fix her TV because he lacked the proper tools, but denied returning and killing Teresita.
Sure.
Joe decided to contact Alan's girlfriend and asked if he had given her any jewelry recently. She said he had given her a pearl ring and a jade pendant. So Joe asked if she would be willing to have Teresita's family and friends inspect the jewelry, and she agreed. They were able to identify the jewelry as Teresita's.
Oh my God.
After this, Alan admitted to murdering Teresita. But at trial, Alan pled not guilty, which ultimately resulted in a hung jury, which led to the case being deemed a mistrial. But a month later, Alan pled guilty and was sentenced to 14 years for murder, robbery, and arson.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
super
wild.
Weird story. Both brutal and bizarre.
Yes. I love it, though. So good.
Yeah, imagine that's how you get caught, though. The ghost of your dead person, like, possesses someone.
It's a cautionary tale that you don't know how you're going to get caught. And it could be something like that. So don't commit murder.
Yep, or you could either be haunted or someone gets possessed and rats you out.
Right? Oh, I don't like it. I would not want to be the friend who is having the nightmares.
Yeah, that'd be really scary.
I wonder, did all of the nightmares stop after he was caught? Or did she have some lingering ones?
I didn't see anything saying she had lingering episodes, but
Because I would.
There wasn't a lot of information on that case to begin with. So
yeah, I would have a hard time going to sleep every night because I would be thinking, I'm gonna dream about my friend, and it's really sad, yeah. And there would be massive anxiety.
Yes.
For me,
it'd be very freaky.
Personally,
I'd be scared to go to bed and have to relive getting murdered by some dude.
Oh, I don't like it.
Me either.
Do you have a chaser for us today?
I do. My chaser is a two-parter, kind of.
Okay.
So I've got another audio drama for people to listen to called Awesome. Homecoming. And it's about a program to kind of help re-facilitate vets coming home from war with PTSD. Oh. But it turns out their program is a little nefarious.
Oh.
And it's a really good show or story. It's a really good audio drama. But yeah. The podcast was picked up by Amazon Prime and turned into a TV show.
Really?
Yeah, okay. And it's got Julia Roberts, it's got the guy from Watcher, like the Bobby Cannavale.
Oh, yeah,
it's got Jeremy Allen White. It's got a bunch of like pretty famous actors in it.
Is the movie out?
Yeah, it's on season 2 right now. I don't know when it came out. It came out in 2018.
Oh. How have I not seen that?
Yeah,
that sounds right up my alley of something I'd want to watch.
It's very interesting. It's shot super well. Like, all the shots look really cool. And they do, like, so it kind of goes back and forth from, like, present day to when they were running the experiments. And it cuts, like, it goes to different frame sizing, I guess, in between. So you can tell, like, oh, we're in the future now. We're in the past. Yeah, because I hate when shows do that and you're just like, you get lost and it's like, I don't know where we're at now.
I hate that so bad.
Yeah.
There are ways to filter things. Do it.
Yeah, they did it in a really good way for this show. So it's pretty interesting and I recommend people. I would say listen to the podcast first because it's better than
the show.
TV show, I think. Like, they change the ending up a little bit, but the season 2 is different. There wasn't a season 2 for the podcast, so there's like new characters and stuff, which is interesting.
Okay, they took some liberties.
Yeah. I just started season 2 this morning, so we'll see how it goes.
I like it.
What is your chaser?
My chaser is also a podcast recommendation, but it is not an audio drama. And my chaser, it's the podcast, the Tony and Ryan podcast, which
that's the one you have a water bottle for.
Yes, it is. It's an Australian comedy podcast. I think it's in the genre of comedy, but it's basically the two friends that just talk, and they're all over social media. They blew up when they actually started their podcast and they have a lot of, like, Normal or Not is one of their features that they do once a week. They used to do things like Something You Can Say in the Kitchen and also in the Bedroom. And
kind of like Family Feud questions at the end,
kind of.
So
it's a podcast that I've been listening to since almost day one, and I really like it. If you've seen Australians say ridiculous stuff, and it's a blonde lady and a guy with dark hair, and that's you've probably seen them if you're on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, because they're all over both of them. So I recommend it. It's one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to daily. So not that they need us.
Sounds interesting.
Touting their abilities, because they're huge, but they're definitely something that I recommend people listen to because it's fun. It's not heavy.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. I think that finishes for today. I don't have anything else fun to say.
Well, just thanks for listening, everybody. Check in with us next week for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode.
Absolutely. Love you, bud.
Love you, Mom.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.